Well, my next guest is a good friend and somebody who's been on this program many, many, many times. When his first Lincoln Rhyme book came out, he was on this program, and we're thrilled to have him back many, many, many books later. Acclaimed author Jeffrey Deaver, the mastermind behind the Lincoln Rhyme series, now adapted as a hit NBC TV show, returns with a new thriller, The Goodbye Man, a follow-up to last year's The Never Game. The Goodbye Man once again features Coulter Shaw, survivalist who makes his living as a tracker. Far more than just a bounty hunter, Shaw is a brilliant scholar of human behavior. He knows how people think, and even more importantly, he knows how they act. And because of that, he often notices the incredibly small nuances that many professional detectives overlook, which he is certainly going to need in this new adventure, The Goodbye Man. It is a great pleasure to welcome back our good friend Jeffrey Deaver to the roundtable. How are you, sir?
Well, very good, Joe. Always look forward to our conversations. And I can remember going back to, oh my God, years and years, and being in different locations on your listeners know about the radio tours we all authors go through, but I always enjoyed yours in particular and can picture myself sitting in the kitchen in one place many years ago, then in the living room another one, now I'm in my office. But how are you doing under circumstances?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine. You know, I'm here. I get to come into work, and I get to work from home, too. So I get the sort of the best of both worlds. You know, I remember you, and you correct me if I'm wrong in this, but I remember, did you ever have a Volvo?
No, I never did. That was not me. It's a wonderful car, but I never had one.
I just remember at some point you were in a broken down car talking to me, but I don't remember the make of the car anymore. But it's very interesting.
Oh, it was a... Yeah, it was a Mazda.
There you go, a Mazda.
Yeah, and it was very old, and I like to think that it was so small that the signal from the phone could beam through the sky roof very easily, because it was a fairly decent conversation. You know, that sometimes you get interference and things like that. But I was in the car because my dogs would just kept barking. Now, I'm master of my own house, and my house is a little bigger now, so they're in different locations. I think they're barking their heads off, but they've got water. They can, they've got their chewies, so they'll be happy.
Yeah, they'll be back. They'll be back with you in no time. All right, so let's talk about the new book. I love this book. I'm a fan of yours. I love your work anyway. So this is a follow up to The Never Game, and I know I've asked you this before, but I'm curious. So at what point in writing The Never Game did you think, I would like to do more in this? Do you start out that way, or does that come in the writing process as you say, okay, I like where I'm going here?
As we've said, probably I've belabored the point, I write for my readers exclusively. This is not about me. I get paid to make things up for a living, and it's just absolutely wonderful. So I want to give them what they want. And in general, the majority of readers of popular fiction like series. They like to meet a character and stick with him or her for a number of books. Some authors have created books in the scores of their featuring their main character. Well, I knew right at the very beginning I wanted Coulter Shaw to come back again and again and again. And so I had to give him a job that would allow him to have an open-ended career. He travels around the country in his Winnebago looking for solutions to rewards, a missing child, for instance, or a escaped convict. And he'll solve that, and then he can jump in his Winnebago and go on to another book. The Goodbye Man, and I had this planned out from the very beginning, The Goodbye Man starts a day after The Never Game ends.
Yeah.
And in fact, The Goodbye Man, when we reach the conclusion there, not giving anything away, of course, that will launch into the third book in the series, which will start the same day that The Goodbye Man ends. And, I hope that's going to just grab readers by the lapels and race them through each book, knowing that they can spend time in this world.
When you look at this idea of a tracker, a survivalist, a person who makes his living as a tracker, what appealed to you about that makeup of a character?
I am the least outdoorsy person you will ever see in your life. Now, I did some skiing. I did some camping when I was younger and foolish. But I'm sorry, if there's no telephone and access to room service, I'm really not interested. But again, it's not about me. It's about what do I think readers would like. And so I created this character who is not really larger than life. He's got his flaws. He's got his own concerns. But he's got a philosophy that we are put on this world. He's not a spiritual person particularly, but he just feels that we're put on this world to meet challenges. And if he can't meet a challenge, he goes kind of crazy. So the survival skills he's learned, which his father has taught him because of the subplot that runs throughout all of the books about the father's past. Those are the tools he uses on the job. And I had to research all of that kind of stuff, survivalism and so forth. But oddly enough, I had finished the book probably in around Christmas time of last year before we had the virus situation. But, you know, when the first inkling that we were going to have widespread problems came about, I thought I went right back to Colter Shaw and I bought a great deal of supplies, you know, months and months worth of water and canned goods and batteries and let's see, medical supplies. So I'm fairly self-sufficient. I have a partner, but she's quarantining elsewhere, as it just turned out. So I'm here with my dogs and believe me, 3 months worth of 3 months worth of food.
When you think about this idea that you've mentioned, and again, I know we've discussed it and somewhat, but the of doing it for the readers. And so, does that mean that you? How much do you listen to them when you're on book tour? How much do you listen and take into account what they say and their input when they write to you and emails and so forth?
Oh, 100%. Critics often will keep themselves in mind when they write a review. They want to be clever. They want to please their readers. They don't necessarily offer advice or attack a book for reasons that seem credible to me. I mean, a critic occasionally will hit on a point that I might take to heart, but generally it's more about them. Readers, however, have no interest in being critical. They are completely honest. I like to hear the good things. For instance, Colter Shaw, they love. They absolutely love. And I can't think of anybody who doesn't. I haven't read any fan letters or reviews from fans that dislike him. So that's good. I've created a good character. Comments are they'd like more romance in the books. They don't see a lot of that. And my response is, you know, the books take place over like 3 days, and there's usually a kidnapped victim or a killer about to strike again. So we don't have a lot of time for dalliance. But in the Goodbye Man, we don't see much of that. But in the Never Game, Colter Shaw had a romantic interlude, and I got snaps for that. So that's good. But I listen to fans. I want to hear what they have to say. And I just really gear the book to them. I don't hurt children. I don't hurt animals. I keep all the violence off camera. We don't really see anything happen. But there is, you know, violence and death in the books. They're crime books. But I just always want to, you know, make sure the reader picks up a book, reads it really quickly, one sitting if possible, and then smiles at the last page. Not because it's funny, but because I've tied up all the loose ends and they've had a roller coaster ride.
I've had Michael Connelly, Elmore Leonard, Robert B. Parker, and John Camp, who is John Sanford, writes as John Sanford, and right. they have all told me, thriller writers who write, you know, just roller coaster ride books, have all said that nothing can kill the momentum quicker than a sex scene in a thriller book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, if you, I did add a little bit of sex in my book, The Sleeping Doll, because that had a cult leader too, a Charles Manson sort of fellow, and he used sex as a weapon and a tool, and so that was appropriate. And in several of the more intimate scenes, again, we don't see everything. I prefer to cut away there, just like with the violent scenes. But those scenes, readers were on the edge of their seat because was this seduction really going to work? Was his power over this woman strong enough to make her do something she really didn't want to do? I mean, basically, it was a sexual assault. And we are on the edge of our seat to see what happened. And, of course, since I don't like, you know, I don't have sexual assaults or rapes in my books. I'll give away a little bit that, no, she was able to withstand it in a kind of a twisty way. But that's the only time that, you know, it's appropriate for me. Otherwise, it's just gratuitous.
When you are starting a new series like this, you have one book and then the other one comes out shortly thereafter. And then I assume there's always Lincoln Rhyme rolling around of oh, OK, we have to go back to that well.
Exactly. Next year we'll see a new Lincoln Rhyme. That's probably the, I guess, 7/8 done. That's I'm saying that to encourage me. It's probably really 3/4 done. But I like 7/8 better. It's like that gas dial is a little higher than the 3/4. So, and that'll be out next year. But I am writing well into the new Coulter Shaw book. And I don't know when that's going to be published. I'll discuss that with my publisher, because I would love to see it out sooner than 2022. That's a little too long for me. So we'll do some negotiating on that one.
Does writing through, you know, and people have talked a lot about this, about you know, the dreams that people have and the mental anguish that comes of just being locked up and being in quarantine, and does it affect you as a writer at all?
My life now, Joe, is pretty much what it's been for the last 30 years. I you know, wake up relatively early, feed my dogs, and then I get to work writing and write through the day. You know, at this stage of my career, having so many books out, published in so many different places, there's a lot of business stuff I have to do. There are contracts I need reviewing.
Yeah.
There are, you know, book jacket approvals that I have to go through and copy for sales, because the Goodbye Man is out now in America and England as well, the UK and the Commonwealth. But maybe in 2 weeks, the French edition will come out and I'll have to do some media there. So it's a busy time, but it's not a lot different now than it is. The thing that is very, you know, troubling career-wise is that I cannot go out on tour, which I love doing.
I know you do.
It's a lot of work, but I like meeting my fans and booksellers and thanking them for their support. And I can't do that now. I'm doing some virtual ones, but of course that's not quite the same. And so that's different. But you mentioned dreams. I have had a lot of bad dreams, and that's unusual for me. Even though I'm a sick and twisted thriller writer, the dreams are, to the extent I have dreams, they're just typical dreams. Oh my God, no, I'm not going to make it to math class. I haven't prepared.
I'm back in high school. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of that. But that's been one difference. And then just a general, you know, general pall of concern. I was checking the news today, and I think his name's Dr. Bright, known as the whistleblower.
Yes.
Is painting a very grim picture. Fauci, yes. Who I think is, you know, great. He's just a wonderful, an icon in this whole crazy world. Is not quite as pessimistic as Bright, but, you know, saying this is going to be with us for a long, long time. And I have, you know, I miss seeing my friends, and again, my partner, who's not nearby. She's not doing, she has some other health issues, and so she had to be particularly careful. So she's been ensconced for about 3 months now. So it's taken its toll, but I still get up and write those books. At least I have, you know, the ability to do that. Think about somebody who's, you know, unemployed and can't get to the office and can't get to their livelihood. What a tragedy that is.
What's the status of the NBC show?
This month, they make a decision whether they're going to renew it or not. I think the announcement in the press was that some shows have been renewed, some have been not renewed. But they're still waiting on a decision for The Bone Collector. It did well. I thought it was a good show, and it did well. But what's going to happen now? I mean, I think the studios are pretty much shut down, so we'll have to see. Did you hear about Matt Damon, who was going to shoot the Ridley Scott film in his small town in Ireland?
And he got stuck in Ireland.
He's there in the small town, and the townspeople are very, very protective of him. They won't let any tourists drive into town to try to find Matt Damon, and he's become I would say their mascot, which is very charming.
What in the world happened to Matt Damon? I thought it was interesting because it's a TV series. I mean, these Lincoln Rhyme has been a movie, of course, and a very successful movie, and now the TV show. How much, going back to Robert B. Parker, who was another one of my dear friends on the show, who I miss very much, but he always used to say that his attitude toward Hollywood and his advice to anyone was just take the money and run. Do you subscribe to that theory, or do you prefer to get involved in the making of that sausage?
No, he is a very wise man to have said that. I think Hollywood is great. It's paid advertising for me. And then I like the idea that my book will be an inspiration to another creative team, and they'll come up with something different but similar, if you know what I mean. And I think that's the way the creative process works. It's kind of like they're making a mixtape. They bring the director's vision, the photographer's vision to a story that I created, and their product will, loosely track what I did, but I think that's wonderful. And I just don't think about it. I don't worry about it at all. I do cash the check pretty quickly because we never know
right.
about Hollywood, what studios are going to be bought and what's going to be around next week. But I think it's just wonderful. And I hope the show comes back again. I mean, it's NBC. That's the network that brought us I Spy, brought us The Man from U.N.C.L.E., brought us The Johnny Carson Show, Seinfeld. So I was really honored to have my name up there with those, iconic folks, even though my name was very small and at the end, it didn't matter. at least the title got the name of my character in it and got the name of the best-selling book they call that the title card. So that's all good news.
How much have you thought about what it is about that character of Lincoln Rhyme and the associated characters of what of why they've hit a chord and struck a chord with readers that were fascinated by them?
I have thought about that a lot. And he's an international character. People all around the world love him. And I'm sure there are some of your listeners who think, well, who's he talking about? Who is this guy? Well, Lincoln Rhyme is a brilliant forensic detective, a modern-day Sherlock Holmes character, but he's also disabled. He is a quadriplegic, and that's a severe disability. He's unable to walk. He can't move from the neck down. And he solves his crimes in his mind. So he's not the fellow who can walk into a bar and, beat somebody up to get him to tell where the victim is. He can't pull out a gun and shoot the bad guy. He has to outthink the bad guy. And his popularity, I think, is rooted in the fact that we all are our minds before we are our bodies. I mean, I would like to be in better shape. I'd like to have more hair. I grumble when I have to get up in the morning with the aches and pains. But nonetheless, my mind still functions fairly well, and my heart and spirit, and if you want to step into the, more of the on-being side of life,
yeah,
that is really who we are, and that's who Lincoln is. And he kind of stands for the proposition that whatever your physical incarnation, we are and we get through life with our mind, and that's a universal concept, apparently. That's all I can come up with.
Well, that's a lot. Well, we're out of time, yeah. But Jeffrey, I you're always love talking to you, and I thank you very much, certainly under these circumstances, that you were able to join us. You are the man behind the Lincoln Rhyme series, but of course the new thriller is The Goodbye Man, and it's terrific. I would tell people to read The Never Game, too, but you don't have to, right? They're all...
Oh, no, they're all standalone.
Standalones.
But there's so many mysteries that show up in The Goodbye Man that completely standalone. But I think readers would be very interested to know where the theme of his father's situation came from.
So, well, let's move more books, Jeffrey.
That's what I'm here for.
The name of the new book is The Goodbye Man. Jeffrey, thank you very much. Be well. Stay safe.
Thanks, Joe.
Be well.
Take care,
thank
Joe.
You.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.